Here they are. Good morning, everyone. I would like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Thursday, February 28th, 2013. We have a quorum. This morning, we're going to, after we deal with the minutes, we're going to be hearing from the department on those sections of the governor's tax bill that deal with issues concerning tobacco, and then we're going to hear a number of different approaches toward the taxation of tobacco, and then we'll take some testimony. So we have the minutes from Tuesday, February 26th in front of us. Are there any corrections? Any spellings that need to be corrected or anything like that? Senator Coonan, looks good. Senator Coonan moves that the minutes from Tuesday, February 26, 2013, be approved as presented. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion prevails and the amendments are adopted. Just like to let members know that in your packets, there is a separate folder for the governor's bill, and it has in it the language of the bill, the revenue estimate, and the Senate counsel's summary. We hope that you will leave those in your folder. Mark them up and whatever, and then put them back in your folder because we'll be referring to them over the next month, and we just assume not have to replenish them. So if you would be so kind as to do that. Okay. Senate File 552. We'll have a presentation from Ms. Von Mosch and Commissioner Ellinger.
Sure.
I guess it's coming up to testify. Senator Scully.
Do you want me to go to the table?
I don't think so. Okay. I think we can just let the department present on their articles, and then when the other authors come up, we'll ask them to. Unless you had a separate bill, we wouldn't do that, if that's okay.
Fine.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner, please identify yourself for the record. And if you, as you present the governor's proposal, if you would direct us to those sections in the bill so that we can follow along in the actual bill language. Ms. Von Mosch.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susan Von Mosch. I'm a staff person with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The cigarette proposal that you are looking at today is just part of a much larger, much broader tax reform proposal of Governor Dayton that broadens the tax base for the sales tax and reduces the rate to 5.5%. It eliminates corporate tax preferences and reduces the corporate franchise tax to 8.4%. It provides property tax relief through a $500 rebate to homeowners and investing $120 million in local government aid and county program aid. It freezes the state levy for 2 years for business properties, and it creates a fourth tier in the income tax, a fourth tier bracket for the income tax for the wealthiest 2% of Minnesotans. And so the cigarette tax is part of that much larger package. And then getting into the specifics of the governor's cigarette tax proposal, you can find the language in Article 4 sections, which is the miscellaneous section of the bill, and it is in sections 1, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. The governor is recommending increasing the cigarette excise tax 94 cents per pack from 48 cents to 142 cents per pack. The total cigarette excise tax and fee would increase from $1.23. I'm used to working with bigger numbers. $1.23 to $2.17 per pack.
Ms. Von Mosch, that language is in which of those sections?
There are. Maybe what I'll do before I do the summary is I'll walk through the language and I'll tell you what the language says.
Of each of those sections, I think that would
okay.
be helpful.
And
then you
I'll
can
start
go back
there.
And make conclusions
there, Madam
or evaluations
Chair.
Of
them. Article 4, Section 1 on page 74, one of the governor's proposal is to increase the excise tax for the wholesale price. And right now the health impact fee and the tobacco excise tax are both at 35% of the wholesale price. The governor's proposal is to leave the health impact fee the same. So the first section basically separates out those two and leaves the health impact fee the same. So the health impact excise tax would remain at 35%, which is current law.
And the revenue impact of that is what?
Madam Chair, this section right here has no revenue impact.
Okay.
This is just a clarifying section. And if you go to...
And so just so we understand, so the language that's stricken strikes the coupling of the tobacco tax and the impact fee. Is that what's happening there?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay.
And then when you turn to page 76... 78, Section 6. That is the provision that increases the cigarette excise tax from 94 cents, from 48 cents to $1.42.
Why do we express that in mills?
I was afraid you were going to ask that question, and I might have to call a friend to answer that.
When people are dealing with that and they expect to see a dollar amount and whatever and they
right.
see something else, they want to know how to translate it, and that includes members of the committee.
I'm going to invite, Madam Chair, with your permission, I would like to invite Mr. Patrick Finnegan up to answer that question. Mr. Finnegan is an attorney in the Special Taxes Division of the Revenue Department and works in tobacco.
The impact of that is... dollars and cents is what, though?
94 cents. It's an increase of 94 cents from 48 cents to $1.42.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members.
Good morning,
my name is
Mr.
Pat Finnegan. I'm one of the Department of Revenue attorneys. Historically, it's always been in mills, and I can't say why. I think other states, some of them use that also. It's just a per cigarette measurement. It's like a mill is 1/10 of a cent. So historically, it's always been that way, but I can't say why it was put in there originally.
So 24 mills equals?
2.4 cents.
And
then normally what you would do is an average pack of cigarettes would have 20 cigarettes, so 2.4 times 20 gives you the 48 cents per pack that we normally.
And by doubling that, that's how we get to, well.
Yeah.
Two times.
Doubling that is for the larger cigarettes, which there really aren't any on the market right now. But
so the Clause 2 there is not an effective increase because there aren't any. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, Madam Chair, that there aren't any cigarettes on the market that fall within that category right now. If they were marketed, that would be the tax that we'd impose.
So the 24 is the 48, and then the 71, we would multiply that also by 2.4.
Well, no, you would multiply... it'd be 7.1 times 20 cents.
I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a little confusing, but the mill rate is just always a 1/10 of a cent.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have any questions about that calculation? So when we see that, it's per cigarette.
Per cigarette, yes.
And then it's multiplied by 20 cigarettes and a In a pack. So then that brings the rate per pack to
$1.42.
$1.42. Okay. Okay, we got that.
Madam Chair, continuing on Section 7, which is at the top of page 79, increases the tobacco products excise tax by 20 percentage points from 35% to 55%. So this is the other part of Section 1 where we kind of, as you said, decouple the health impact fee excise tax for tobacco products from other tobacco products excise tax.
And the amount of money, if we look back on the revenue estimate, the effect of Section 6 is $155,200,000 starting in is this section effective this year? So this is,
Madam Chair, yes, the
effective fiscal year
date is July 1 of 2013, and you are correct. Section 6 would, on the revenue estimate, would be the first line of the revenue estimate for the cigarette excise tax.
And the second line on the revenue estimate is the sales tax.
It's the fourth line down. It's the tobacco excise tax.
No, I'm asking about the third line down.
We are coming to the third line down.
Okay. I'll ask you. I want to make sure that we understand that third line represents the governor's proposal of reducing the sales tax rate to 5.5. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, it's the it's the sales tax on the tobacco products. If you'll let me walk through,
okay.
I think I
all
can
right.
answer all of your questions. Okay. So Section 7 is increasing the tobacco products excise tax, and that is line 4 of the revenue estimate. So for fiscal year 2014, that would be $11.8 million, and then you can follow that across. Section 8 is the similar provision for the use tax for the other tobacco products.
And that's still reflected in that fourth line?
Yes. Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, I believe that is correct. Then Section 9 is the cigarette tax, and it is the sales tax, which is the second line in the revenue estimate. And right now we have an in lieu of sales tax on cigarettes that is recalculated based on a survey that the department does during the summer and the early part, or late spring, early summer, and then based on the changes in the price of cigarettes, we calculate an in lieu of sales tax that becomes effective January 1 of the following year. What this provision does is it would allow us to recalculate that in lieu of tax at the same time that the other increases in the prices go into effect. And the $1.1 million in FY14 on the revenue estimate reflects that adjustment.
And that in lieu of tax, is that reflecting the change in the sales tax on other products that is being
Madam
proposed?
Chair, no, it is not. It is just for
it's totally separate.
It is.
It has nothing to do with the sales tax rate that is being proposed to with the base broadening and the lowering of the rate.
Madam Chair, no, it is not. It is a cigarette.
Or at least I need to understand why those things are different.
Yes, this is the in lieu of tax is applied to cigarettes. Then Section 9, I did Section 9. Okay, so then we're on
and,
Section...
Ms. Von Masch, I do see that, or it's pointed out to me, that the tax is equal to 6.5%. So they're in line, in current law, page 79, line 20, and so that will still be calculated at that amount. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay, so there's no change in that in the amount of the in lieu of, quote, sales tax on cigarettes. It remains at six. It's going to remain at 6.5. It's not going to be lowered.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Should we understand that?
And then, Madam Chair, the last section is Section 10, and that's a floor stocks tax that we put in place.
Would you explain what floor stocks are?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will. The floor stocks tax requires all sellers to pay the increased tax on the stamped products that they have in inventory when the new tax takes effect. And the reason we have this in the bill is to prevent a windfall, a possible windfall, by wholesalers if they know that the tax rate is going up significantly. There might be an inclination to stock up, load up their inventory at the lower rate. And so this basically says
imposed not on new, not only on new inventory, but on inventory that's on the shelves.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
And is that the typical policy when any change is made to increase the tobacco tax?
Madam Chair, yes, it is.
Okay. So that's nothing new, or nothing new in the approach. And that is the floor stocks tax is only happens once. If you look at the revenue estimate, if I'm correct, and it's for this 1 year, it'd be 17.9. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Any questions? Are there any other sections, Ms. Von Mosch?
Madam Chair, no, there isn't. And if you would like, I could walk through kind of a global summary, if it
sure,
would be
that'd
helpful.
Be great.
So the governor is recommending increasing the cigarette excise tax 94 cents to $1.42 per pack. We discussed the cigarette sales tax rate that would be increased at the same time to reflect the higher price. That's the in lieu of tax. We also have the floor stocks tax that would apply to inventories, and that would be at 94 cents per pack. There is no change proposed for the cigarette fee, the 75-cent health impact fee. The tobacco products excise tax would be increased 20 percentage points from 35% to a total of 55% of the wholesale price. So the tobacco products and the tobacco products health impact fee of 35% of wholesale would remain unchanged. What we're doing here, what the governor is proposing, is the total tax and fee on the other tobacco products would increase from 70% to 90% of the wholesale price. And you'll also notice in the middle part of the revenue estimate that when we're looking at the fees, the impact on the health impact fund, that this proposal actually reduces the amount of revenue generated for the health impact by the health impact fee that goes into the health impact fund, because by increasing the price of cigarette and tobacco products, we're actually reducing consumption. And because we didn't change the rate for the health impact excise tax for either cigarettes or tobacco, we have a reduction for that fund.
Sure.
The fiscal impact.
Excuse me, Commissioner Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Von Mosch, while we're having this discussion about the health impact fee and the cigarette tax, and I do recognize that there is going to be, I think it's 31 million packs of cigarettes less sold. But why did the department contemplate just making the health impact fee part of the cigarette tax and not having this separate mechanism? Why not just add that onto the cigarette tax and call it a tax, which is kind of what it is?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, that just was not part of the deliberations that went into the proposal that was developed for the governor's budget.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members and to the department. Maybe we ought to contemplate that, just kind of simplify this and not go through this extra step, and then you can just know what your cigarette tax is, and that's what it is, and not have to mess around with that health impact fee.
Ms. Von Mosch?
Madam Chair, in conclusion, I'll just summarize that the fiscal impact for the governor's cigarette and tobacco tax proposal. Taken together, the health impact fund is ultimately transferred into the general fund once the Department of Human Services documents the costs of the impacts of cigarette smoking among citizens of Minnesota. So that money does ultimately end up in the general fund. So the total impact for fiscal year 14 and 15 is $320 million. And, Madam Chair, with that, I will conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. Is there any questions? Senator, we'll start with Senator Gazelka and then go back to Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that you estimate this to be about a 14% decrease in tobacco use. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator, I am looking for the part in the revenue estimate that deals with the elasticity. I believe it's in the third bullet of the second page. I'm sorry. I have a different revenue estimate than you have. Let me find the one that you have.
Madam Chair, while she's
Senator
looking,
Gazelka.
I guess my question is going to be, how did you come up with the number you find? Because it looks like it's about a threefold increase, and I know in Michigan when they had a threefold increase, sales decreased about 26%. So I'm just wondering how you came to that number.
Madam Chair, our tax research department has elasticity models that they use, and they have the last time there was a change, which would have been the change with the imposition of the health impact fee, our model at that time was spot on. The model accurately predicted the change in consumption, and our estimate was held in that scenario, and they are using the same model. They do add information to it periodically as there's more information available on sales and consumption of cigarette taxes, and so that is how they come up with that estimate.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, is the governor's goal to raise taxes through this, or revenue, or whatever you want to call it, or to reduce consumption, or what is the goal of this particular part of the governor's plan?
Madam Chair, Senator.
Ms. Von Mosch.
The goal of this, and this is why Commissioner Ellinger is joining us today, the goal of the governor's proposal that we're talking about today is really more related to health policy and the benefits that can be gained from an increase in cigarette tax rather than from a revenue perspective.
And members, if you wanted to follow Senator Gazelka's line of questioning in terms of the estimates, that's on page 9 in the analysis from the Department of Revenue, how they calculate that or the results of that calculation. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Von Mosch, back to the health impact fee just a little bit. So if this proposal becomes law, Minnesota would have $1.42 plus the 75-cent health impact fee. So how do we compare with the surrounding states with regard to our cigarette tax? I don't know exactly if I should be making that $2.17 or $1.42, or how are you viewing our competitiveness with the surrounding states?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy,
Ms. Von Mosch.
For the purposes of doing this type of comparison, what we look at is we look at the excise tax and the health impact fee. Minnesota does have some other fees that apply to the cigarette, the total taxes and fees, but other states don't. Like, other states may or may not have an in lieu of sales tax. So for the comparison with other states, we look at those two items. We start out in the comparison at $1.23, and we're ranking 28th. With the governor's proposal, which raises the PAC to $2.17, we end up being ranked 11th. Wisconsin is the highest state of our neighboring states. They are ranked eighth at $2.52. South Dakota right now is above our current rate. They're ranked 23rd, and they are at $1.53. Iowa is 25th at $1.36, and North Dakota is at 46. They are taxing cigarettes at 44 cents a pack, and I believe they had a proposal just this past year to increase that, and it was not successful. So they are holding where they are right now. There are a number of states that are at the top of the list that have increased their rates in the past 2 years, 2012, 2011, and that includes Connecticut and...
Ms. Von Marsh, do you have that information on a chart that that you could
provide
for,
Madam
the committee?
Mm-hmm. The ranking I have on the chart. The other information I have on other states, which I don't have on a chart, but I can provide to you, is that Illinois raised its cigarette tax to $1.98 by 94 cents in 2012. Rhode Island increased their tax by 4 cents. They're already very high. They increased it to $3.50 in 2012. Connecticut, Vermont, and Hawaii have all increased their taxes within the last 3 years.
Give members an opportunity to look at this, the ranking, and I think it'll be helpful to, as we hear other proposals too, to see where they're going to fall. Any questions on for Ms. Any further questions or comments for Ms. Von Marsh? Senator Gazelka.
Would it be appropriate to offer an amendment on this bill or have a conversation about an amendment?
I haven't thought of that, but we certainly do have the bill in front of us. If you would like to offer an amendment for discussion, would that be sufficient at this point, rather than moving it so that it becomes part of the discussion along with the other bills that are coming forward?
Sure.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's fine. You know, part of the reason
do you have language?
I talked to. Council, and I'll just explain, you know,
sure, go
this
ahead.
Is kind of the process here.
No
but,
problem.
We talk about, you know, I asked what the goal of this bill was, and it's a health policy rather than revenue. Well, if that's the case, then why don't we just raise the age to 21 if it's about health policy rather than raising revenue, because it's just like alcohol. Alcohol is 21. So that I asked the council to pursue an amendment along those lines that we could talk about.
Okay, I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to get what the revenue impact would be relative to eliminating, at least legally, younger smokers.
Right. You know, and I would like comments from the testifier about where they're at, if you know, because, well, I just want to hear their comments.
Sure. And from members too. What would you think of that idea of raising the purchase of cigarettes to 21? And I would ask, has it ever been there? Is that mm-hmm. Do anybody know the history of that? At what point did we impose an age limit? Because I can imagine at some time there was no age limit in the law.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Madam Chair, we'll have to look into that. I don't know if we know the answer right offhand. And Madam Chair, regarding Senator Gazelka's question about the age limit, I know that part of the health policy issues are focused on younger smokers who are just beginning the habit. I guess I would be curious to hear what Commissioner Ellinger has to say, because I also think that there is a part of the cessation agenda that really is focused at older smokers too. And I'm not the expert in that area, but I think that the Department of Health could add something to the discussion in that area.
Senator Gazelka, why don't we save that question, not for the tax people, but for the health people? But we will address it. We'll ask them to address it. Any other questions for Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch? Well, then let's hear from the department. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Ehlinger, and we hope that in your comments you will address the issue that Senator Gazelka just raised.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Ed Ehlinger, Commissioner of Health. I'm a pediatrician. I'm also the chair of the Tobacco Forum Policy Committee for the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. And as Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch mentioned, that this taxes serve several purposes. Certainly, taxes raise revenue, but taxes are also a major and very effective public health policy, and particularly as it relates to raising the price of tobacco. This has been shown to be a very effective public health policy in addressing what is our number one public health problem in the country and also the number one public health problem in the state of Minnesota, and that's the use of tobacco. And it's an issue that continues to be with us because the tobacco industry spends about $27 million a day, over $1 million an hour, targeting young folks, but also targeting low-income and populations of color and American Indians with their marketing. It's not just the youth that they target, but it targets vulnerable populations throughout our state. Right now, there are about 625,000 Minnesotans, or 16% of the state's population, that still smoke. And we've noticed over the last several years that the rate of decline, the rate of improvement, and the rate of decline in smoking has slowed, and partly because we have not had the kind of input to resources to do the prevention activities that are necessary, but also because the tobacco industry continues to focus their marketing efforts. This year, about 77,000 children will use tobacco. And smoking, we estimate and look at the facts that show that Minnesota spends about $3 billion a year. It costs Minnesota about $3 billion a year in health care costs, which is over $8 per pack of cigarettes sold. And we've also noted that tobacco is a very price-sensitive activity, particularly among teenagers and individuals with low incomes. And we noticed that a 10% increase in price will reduce youth smoking by about 6.5% and the adult rate by 2%. So we know that we need to do both, and this happens both because of reduction in initiation, but also by increasing cessation. And this is where just focusing on the age would not be as effective in getting people to quit smoking. We noticed that when the prices were increased in the past, quit attempts increased among adults. And we know that over 50% of the people, probably close to 75% of smokers, really do want to quit. And in our surveys that were done following the increase in the health impact fee in 2005 and in 2009 when the federal tax went up, that people really did make additional quit attempts because of the increase in price. So we know that the tax increase will keep people from starting, particularly youth, but it'll also increase the number of people who will try to quit. And the more quit attempts you have, the more likely they are to reduce their use.
So what are the statistics on the estimates of those who fail to start smoking because of increase in price?
Among youth, it's about 6%, 6.5% reduction in youth rate with an increase in price. And that's usually because of where they don't start to smoke.
And that does not necessarily take into account the legal age, but all youth smokers, like the 12-year-olds as well as the 18-year-olds. Is that correct? So it's independent of the legal age?
It's under the age of 18. youth under the age of 18. We also know that one of the biggest targeted groups for the tobacco industry are the 18 to 26-year-olds. These are the young adults in the transition, and we had always thought that that would not be a time when people would initiate. If you haven't started smoking by 18, we're immune to starting, but that is not true. The tobacco industry has recognized that that 18 to 26-year-old age range is a time when individuals are really sensitive to the marketing of the tobacco industry. So that is the period where we're really focusing on reducing the initiation of smoking. And so just raising the tobacco use age to age 21 would really not protect a really vulnerable population, those in the 21 to 26-year-old age range. You know, we know that tobacco has a huge impact throughout our country. And we think that our estimates are that if we raise the tax on cigarettes and other tobacco products by 94 cents, we could reduce youth smoking by 11%, and we would save more than $10 billion in health care costs over the next 5 years, with fewer smoking-related cancer deaths, heart disease, and stroke. You talked about the parity with other states, and we're still behind Wisconsin in terms of the tobacco tax. And some of the other issues that have come out is the relationship of tobacco as a regressive tax. And you know, I've certainly had this conversation with the governor. He was was hesitant about initiating a tobacco tax. And I'm really pleased that he put it in his budget to increase the tobacco tax. He recognized it as a very powerful public health tool and recognizes that this tobacco illnesses are a regressive disease, really are affecting populations of color and low-income populations more than anybody else. African Americans are 30 to 40% more likely to die of lung cancer than their white counterparts because of smoking. And the issues related to heart disease, cancer, diabetes, stroke, lower respiratory diseases are the leading cause of death for American Indians, and again, related to tobacco use. And low-income smokers suffer disproportionately from the health effects of smoking and are 70% more responsive to increases in prices. And the research has shown that if you look at a population-based level with you, when you increase the price of tobacco and looking at and factoring in the reductions in tobacco use by low-income populations, they actually end up with more money in their pockets at the end with a tobacco increase, so that they actually benefit economically from a price increase because their use of tobacco goes down. Their initiation rates go down, their cessation rates go up. So with all of the data, I believe this is a really good public health policy to initiate, and I firmly support increasing the tobacco tax.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Koselka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a brief comment about helping the low-income people that are smokers. You know, it helps if they eventually quit, you know, but there's a whole bunch of people that maybe want to quit but don't quit, and they're the people that least can afford to have an extra fee or expense put on them, tax fee, whatever you want to call it. So how are you going to address those that didn't quit and we just raised the amount of taxes that we're charging on them and they're not quitting and now they don't have money for some of the other things? What is your response to that group?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, we know that tobacco causes tremendous harm, and we know that most people who are tobacco users want to quit. And we know that when you increase the price, that increases the quit attempts. That if we don't, when we look at the overall impact on our society by raising the price of tobacco, we're going to have fewer people using tobacco. Particularly, we'll have a greater impact on low-income populations. So overall, the low-income population will serve on an individual basis. The person who doesn't quit, yes, they will be spending more. But the pressure will be there, the economic pressure for them to quit, and that is what we're seeing what will happen with this tax increase.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner, what percentage of that population does quit statistically with a tax increase on cigarettes?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't have the specific data on low-income quit rates with various. We know what the overall impact will be in terms of more low-income folks will quit But I don't know what those who attempt what their quit rate is. I don't have that data. There may be some others who will have that coming up who could answer that question.
So, Madam Chair, I think it would be wise for us to have that, fair for us to have that, because I think if you ask those that are low income that are using tobacco now, if you ask them, do you think we should raise the pack of cigarettes about a buck? You know, how do you feel about that? I don't think you'd get a positive response.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, on an individual basis, people who don't quit, and they may attempt, they will be spending more. But on a population-based level and for the overall health of Minnesota, this will help everyone, but it'll particularly help the low-income populations and populations of color and American Indians.
Thank you. Before I call on Senator Thompson, I thought people might want to know that we do now have the statement from Commissioner Showalter, and the February budget forecast shows a projected budget deficit of $627 million, which is an improvement of $463 million from the November budget forecast that showed a projected deficit of $1.1 billion. I think that's good news for all of us, even though we still have a deficit. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Commissioner. I got to admit, I find opposition to raising the age, as Senator Gazelka suggested, to be bizarre. I believe, if I understood you correctly, you testified that this is the number one public health threat that we face. If you look at back when I was, I think, in high school, maybe middle school, I don't know, we changed the drinking age in this state to 18 for a time. Then it got moved to 19 and eventually back to 21. The problem with 18 was that obviously a lot of high school seniors turn 18 during their senior year. My son will next year, for example. And so it was easier for students underage to get alcohol because some of their best friends were 18 years of age. So I have to believe that access to cigarettes for 15 and 16 and 14-year-olds is greater when 18-year-olds are able to buy cigarettes. It doesn't surprise me that, to put it in economics terms, is a fairly elastic demand curve for cigarettes, that it's something you don't have to have, it's not a necessity. Economic theory would tell you to be pretty responsive to price. But how could it not help some to raise the age to 21 if, in fact, our goal is reducing smoking and addressing what you've described as the number one public health threat in America? But if you are not for that, you said a big problem is that people are being seduced into smoking up to age 26, 18 and 26. Would you support changing the age of legal smoking to 26?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I want to clarify, I was not opposed. I didn't say I was opposed to raising the age of tobacco. I thought there was a thought of one or the other. I think raising the price of tobacco would be the most effective across the board and having an impact. Certainly raising tobacco is a public health problem. If it was not a legal drug at this stage and coming through the FDA, it would not be approved. But it is in our society. And so if we could get fewer and fewer people to smoke, I think raising the age certainly would reduce the number of folks, no doubt about it. Whether we can politically do that, raising it to 26, again, would be, a public health effort. Not sure how realistic that is. We know that the things that have been done that are effective, states throughout the country have raised the price of tobacco, so that we know that is possible. But I certainly would not be opposed to raising the age of tobacco use.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to follow up briefly.
Sure, Senator
I apologize,
Thompson.
Commissioner, if I mischaracterized your position. I understood you as you were taking a position against it. If I mischaracterized that, I apologize. It was not intentional. Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I must be the only small government guy left in the room, I guess. So.
I mean, you're not the nanny state guy. Yeah. It's Gazelka and Thompson.
Yeah, I know. I'm so surprised.
Hear, hear.
My question is, when you're analyzing the behavior of smokers, are you analyzing out-of-state purchases or online purchases or any of that, and what kind of move there might be to people just procuring their cigarettes some other way?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, when we look at tobacco use rates, we look at wherever they are coming from. When you look at the tax policy, then I think that's when the Department of Revenue really needs to look at where the cigarettes are being purchased from. And certainly there is some change. We look at change from internet sales and cross borders, but we see that as a relatively small amount in the overall tobacco use within each state, particularly within Minnesota. Yes, some of that occurs, but it's a relatively small amount, so that raising the price of tobacco may have an impact on cross-state sales and internet sales, but we see that overwhelmingly it'll affect tobacco use within this state.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka, we do want to get on to the
just
bills.
One quick comment. I appreciate Senator Scoy getting me back off the ledge and into small government.
There you go.
I think I'm bringing it up mostly because I'm not sure it's about health policy and that we're trying to raise more revenue, and so I was trying to make that point. So thank you.
Well, and you know, I would point out that we don't have a blind eye to the or a closed eye to the revenue, obviously. $300+ million is a significant contribution to dealing with our budget issues. So I don't think anyone is going to deny that, or I'm certainly not, even though I appreciate the commissioner and the governor's position that it's mostly motivated for them by a health policy issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will now proceed to considering the other tax proposals that we have in front of us, which are, my understanding, might have even more impact. The minutes will reflect that we discussed the tobacco article rather than having the actual bill in front of us. So Senator Gazelka, in the future, when we take up the bill in the full committee, the governor's bill, that would be the time to offer your amendment, if that's okay.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Dibble, Senate File 209. And members, now we're moving away from the governor's proposal. You can certainly have those materials in front of you to compare, but we're now dealing with members' proposals. Senator Dibble, 209.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate file, I have an author's amendment. I think it's the A3.
Okay.
Are we able to?
Yes.
Okay.
On the bills that come before us, we want them to reflect what the author has, and there were no such amendments coming from the governor. So the A3 amendment is being distributed on Senate File 209. Senator Pizza moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment, the ayes have it, and the amendment motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for this opportunity to present this bill. Similar in its objectives to the governor's bill and the other bills that you're going to hear this morning, and that's to address one of our state's most pressing public health problems, which, of course, is tobacco use. The fact that it raises money isn't a bad thing, so I don't think those two goals are mutually exclusive. You've already heard quite a bit from the commissioner, so I'll just kind of fly at a very high level and just make just reiterate a couple of his points very quickly. Curbing tobacco use among youth and low-income communities and communities targeted by the tobacco industry has been some work that I've been doing for quite some time now, going back to the Freedom to Breathe Act and what we called the Tic-Tac Tobacco Act, the Tobacco Modernization and Compliance Act of a couple of years ago that had broad support, which helped address youth access, getting some of those candy types of products behind the counter.
Senator Dibble, yes. We did adopt your A3 amendment, but I wonder if you would just briefly, since it's a page in line, just tell us what the impact of that A3 amendment is.
Sure. Very quickly, what that accomplishes is it does not index the tax rates that are called for in the bill, and then it also we enact a minimum tax on moist snuff as we do on other tobacco products. That's a new provision in the bill, and it just makes sure that that there's no way to get around that minimum tax through a packaging technique that tobacco companies
use. So there's no indexing.
Correct. Yeah, the indexing is removed
sure
from this bill,
that.
In my amendment.
Okay.
Thanks. So I'll give a very high level overview of what the bill accomplishes, and then we can go through section by section if you like. What this does, Madam Chair and members, is it increases the cigarette excise tax by a net of $1.60 a pack, effective on July 1st of this year. It does that by raising it to $2.35, but then it eliminates the health impact fee. So that subtracts 75 cents, so it's a net increase of $1.60. It increases the
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
As I think we had a pretty extensive discussion on the governor's approach, could you say, other than the amount, if there are any places where your bill differs from the governor's approach? I think that would be helpful to us as we go forward, if you can.
If I can.
If you can.
I listened, but I didn't. and more expert folks who are more familiar with all of the bills can help highlight the differences probably better than
but
I can.
But mostly it is a larger increase in the tax itself rather than the kind of internal workings of the
correct, other than the elimination of the health impact fee is a difference.
Okay.
Kind of,
thank you.
Kind of rolls that all together. We also increase the tax rate on other tobacco products from 35% to 95% of the wholesale price. We provide we define little cigars, an issue that's been around for quite a while. We carried that in the Tobacco Modernization Act and dropped it for another day. So it defines little cigars as cigarettes and treats them as cigarettes for all other purposes as well. So little cigars simply become cigarettes as they actually are, with some just minor differences between them and what cigarettes actually are.
Senator Dibble,
yes.
Why are you proposing, and this is a question that had come up from Senator Scoy, or at least the relationship between the health impact fee and the actual tax on, and I think most of us think of concentrating on cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you proposing, what's the policy position about repealing the health impact fee?
Well,
it looks like you're just rolling that into the.
Correct.
You're repealing it. You're not reducing it. You're just taking that 75 cents.
Right.
And like Senator Scoy is suggesting, you are.
I'm doing it specifically, Madam Chair,
to make
gain
it
Senator
make
Scoy's
whole thing
vote for this
a,
bill.
yeah, right. Okay, whatever. But you're trying to make everything as a cigarette tax, so it's really when we're looking at other states and all that kind of thing, we're doing apples to apples. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. That's a great statement of what I would say. And to get away from the cute language of fees and other, to be straightforward with what we're actually doing. You know, the health impact fee came about through a very tortured discussion and negotiation a few years ago. So we're just going to be a little bit more straightforward. I mentioned the moist snuff, bringing that into the minimum tax. There's a floor stocks tax that's imposed, and for existing inventories, so that avoids the stockpiling phenomenon, so folks don't order in a whole bunch of products to kind of beat the deadline, as it were. I think we had some discussion about this in lieu sales tax, similar approach to the governor's, provides for an adjustment of the in lieu sales tax rate. And that is in very high level summary of the bill and its major provisions.
What appropriation was made to the Commissioner of Revenue
You
were getting rid of here?
I'm
just looking at the revenue estimate now.
Right. I'm sorry. That's Section 14, I think, it's Section 14 in the bill as introduced. And that's $100,000 do a study, to do what's called a tobacco tax collection report, so that, and this is another idea that's been around for quite a while, so that we can take step back and take a look at our overall tax collection system, to provide a uniform system of collection, discourage tax evasion, prevent illegal sales, particularly the kids. The goals are set forth in
that section 14. And that's specifically 14. In the area of tobacco tax.
Correct, right. Madam Chair.
Any questions? Did you have further testimony yourself? Or
I think some other folks would like to step up and speak to this bill.
I think
as well.
We're going to have the other bills presented,
okay.
And then we can have people speak to the general policies that are in the governor's approach and then in these other approaches as well.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble, before you leave, I don't know if I didn't catch it or not. Did you talk about your changing the definition of these little cigars to be called a cigarette? We had a pretty good discussion of that earlier this year in division here, and we had some discussion about this definition that 4.5 pounds or less per thousand. It would be one company that would meet that criteria, and we were a little concerned about getting in the middle of marketing. Talk to you about if there's a better mechanism to use.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few folks are interested in this subject and have visited with me. My goal is pretty simple, and I'm guessing that in the testimony, I'm sure you've seen them before, the little demonstration, what we're exactly talking about. My goal is pretty straightforward, and that's to stop this charade, this pretext of calling what are actually cigarettes, little cigars, for the purpose of evading, some of the price mechanisms and some of the marketing issues that come up. These are cigarettes that are, sold on a cheaper basis, and with few other flavorings and the like that are really targeted at youngsters, and they evade classification as cigarettes on very narrow and very technical grounds. They are all, for intents and purposes, cigarettes, and my goal is to capture them as cigarettes because that's what they are. They're not little cigars.
Madam Chair, Senator
Dibble, Senator Skoy.
Just to the broader audience, I, too, am interested in achieving that goal. And I know everybody says, well, this is what everybody else is doing as a definition, so that means we should do it, too. But I'm still kind of looking around for a better way to do that. So if anybody has ideas, I'd like to hear them.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Skoy.
Senator Dibble.
Then we share that goal, so. I'm absolutely open to working if we don't get there with this language.
Okay, further questions for Senator Dibble? Seeing none, we will lay over Senate File 209 as amended and invite, who's next?
Senator Nelson.
Senator Nelson.
And Madam Chair, I assume you want me to stick around in the hearing room?
I'm not sure that's necessary, Senator Dibble.
Okay.
Unless, we'd love to have you, but.
Right. Well, if I need to be summoned, we'll keep an eye on the proceedings.
That.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We have now Senator Nelson brings us Senate File 144. Is that correct, Senator Nelson?
Yes.
And Senator Nelson, I believe you also have a an amendment that you'd like offered. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to offer the or have someone offer the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that
Senator
I would like.
Senator Dietzick moves the A1 amendment. We'll wait just a moment to get that. Ms. Von Mosch informs me that, by the way, that the first reference to prohibiting tobacco products being sold to those under the age of 18, Senator Gazelka, was 1963. So that's how long the law on tobacco products, and I believe it's not just cigarettes, but all tobacco products, 1963, and it was put in the criminal code. Okay, so we have the A1 amendment to Senate File 144, the Senate Counsel's summary, and we have the revenue estimate. So did we adopt the A1 amendment?
Yep.
Senator Dietzick moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have Senate File 144 as amended before. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for taking the time today to discuss this very important problem. And I also appreciate the fact of going third here. You've already been schooled about mill rates to dollars and those type of things. So, and floor stocking taxes. So all those things are applicable in this bill as well. But, tobacco use, especially by youth and young adults, is unacceptable. And we have the opportunity today to make a difference. I'm an avid supporter of a smarter approach to tax policy. And while I typically do not support tax increases, this is an exception. Right now, we have a high business property tax, and we have modest tobacco tax rates. I'd like to see that reversed. This tobacco price increase will discourage tobacco use, and it will provide lower property taxes for businesses. I find it preferable to tax behavior that causes a dramatic increase in healthcare costs rather than to tax job creators. And as has been alluded to today, I'm not the first Republican to propose a tobacco tax increase. If you recall, the first tobacco tax increase proposal harkens back to the Pawlenty administration with the recommendations of the 21st Century Tax Commission. Protecting the health and well-being of Minnesota kids and making our businesses more job-friendly, making Minnesota a more job-friendly state, is a bipartisan effort, and it's something that I'm proud to be a part of. So let me tell you a little bit about my bill. My bill increases the tax on a pack of cigarettes by $1.29. Under my bill, the
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
So that compares to the governor's how?
The governor's proposal, I believe, was 94 cents.
94 cents.
And
yours
I believe
is?
And mine is $1.29.
And Senator Dibble's was?
Higher than that, I believe.
$1.60, I think.
$1.69, possibly.
Okay. Just so we understand.
And I will tell you, Madam Chair and committee members, how we arrived at that number. It was after a great deal of thought. I think Senator Skoy might like to know, how does this impact the total cost? Because I've only purchased a couple packs of cigarettes in my life, and one was for the little cigar bill. I wanted to see what those looked like. And the interesting thing is, when you go to buy those, you don't really separate in your mind a health impact fee and a tobacco tax. You just know what the cost of the product is. But for the policy-minded folks in this room who do want to know, under my bill, the total tax per pack would be $2.52, which is equal to Wisconsin's cigarette tax. So if it's – and I'm talking about how the consumer would feel it, because Wisconsin taxes and imposes taxes in different places along the line than Minnesota does. But at the end of the day, to the consumer, it would feel the same cost as in Wisconsin. And that would be $1.77 excise tax plus the 75-cent health impact fee for a total of $2.52. And then, as you've heard earlier, when cigarette taxes are increased, it's also important to increase the cost on other tobacco products to keep them parallel. And my bill also does that. It increases the tax on other tobacco products from 70% of the wholesale price, which it is currently, to 95% of the wholesale price. And the reason is to prevent smokers from substituting other addictive products like snus and little cigars with cigarettes. Under my bill, this is a little different than the others you've heard today, the new revenue generated from this tax will go to offset the business property tax. So unlike those other bills that you've heard today, this bill is revenue neutral. And I know that we'll have compelling testimony today, I believe, Madam Chair, discussing the public health benefits of increasing the price of tobacco. So just let me end by saying that increasing the price of tobacco is a win for Minnesota. It's a win for health. Higher tobacco costs encourage current smokers to quit and discourage price-sensitive youth from ever picking up their first pack. It's a win for the state. By increasing the tax on tobacco, we can offset other taxes and dedicate our funding to other priorities. In this case, making our state a more business-friendly state by reducing those business property taxes. And it's a win for the public. Unlike most other taxes, Minnesotans overwhelmingly support increasing the tax on tobacco products. And, Madam Chair, I don't know if you want me to do a bill walkthrough, but that's the high level of the bill.
No, I think we understand that from the presentation we had from the department, how to fit your bill in. I have a couple of questions. First, you use the money that's raised from the your increase in the cigarette tax to offset some of the levy. Some of the state general levy, but it does not eliminate it. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. Currently, the statewide levy is about $851 million. It's estimated that the cigarette tax increase proposed in my bill, along with those other tobacco products, will be about $380 million for the biennium. So what it effectively does is and I also should say it freezes the inflator on the business property tax, which is one of the big concerns, certainly I think amongst all Minnesotans and certainly bipartisan concerns. So it freezes the inflator, and then anything beyond the inflator, which is about $20 million, goes to buy down that business property tax. But it's not enough to eliminate it.
Senator Nelson, just 1 second. Would you be supportive of using the increase in the sales tax, not sales tax, in the tobacco tax to offset other business taxes, or you would only support doing the statewide property tax?
Well, Madam Chair, committee members, I think reducing business taxes in general across the state is important for our economic competitiveness and for jobs in our state, so I certainly support that. The reason I picked the business property tax is it is the most egregious tax as far as being competitive in this state. There are very few states that have this tax. As you are well aware, Madam Chair, the inflator on this tax is stifling, and it's continuing to grow at a rate that we just cannot sustain. And I've also noticed, Madam Chair, that it's been a very bipartisan effort to reduce this business property tax. I also believe the governor has a freezing of the business property tax in his budget as well. So I see it as the most important tax that we can reduce is that business property tax.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to the point, wouldn't it eliminate the tax over a number of bienniums, though? Just so I understand what the proposal is. While it doesn't raise enough money in this biennium to eliminate it, wouldn't you propose to continue applying the tax to the elimination so over time it would?
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, I would like to do that, but the numbers don't work that way because the business property tax continues every year. Right now, as I said, it's $850 million for the coming budget cycle, and the revenues from the cigarette tax increase that I'm proposing are $380 million for the biennium. And for the next biennium, even then it would be about the same, where there would be $851,000 projected in business property taxes and about $380 million in the cigarette tax.
So it never
increase.
Gets there, is what you're
it,
saying.
It will not solve the problem. It will solve the inflator, and it will reduce those business property taxes. And as I think you discussed earlier in committee today, there is an elasticity factor in that we know the higher the cost of tobacco products, the fewer people do smoke. So, and that's figured into the revenue estimate as well.
And Senator Nelson, you're not proposing, and I didn't read the amendment carefully, that that this reduction in or this increase in the tobacco taxes be a dedicated fund to relieve the statewide levy, just that it you just have the two connected in your bill. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. The revisers and the tax researchers were able to craft the language, as you will read it, that just says that, as we would understand it, the business property tax levy is reduced by the amount of the increase in the cigarette tax.
Okay, but it's not.
They are tied together.
Yes. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Just want to make sure people understand that, Senator Gazelka.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, the concept is new. I do like the way of trying to find some way to deal with the business property tax levy. I know when I first looked at this, I thought, well, we don't want to get business should pay property taxes too. But I think a lot of people think this is just eliminating that totally, and it's not.
No.
A business owner has a building, they pay 1.5 to 2 times what a resident of the same value would be, and then we add another about 30%. So this would just get rid of this 30%, however we do it, mm-hmm. and it does not affect local property taxes. But particularly for small businesses, I'm sure it's big businesses too, but small businesses, this is probably the number one complaint they have, is our business property taxes are killing them, particularly if they're in a down market and they're not doing well. We're still charging them the same amount, even if they're barely making it.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you want to go to a broader discussion now or if she's done walking through the bill or where we're at. But
well, we do have is this the last bill?
No, we have one more bill.
We have one more bill, and I would like to leave at least half an hour for the testifiers, Senator Scoy.
Okay, I'll just be real brief then.
Okay.
Maybe when the testifiers are coming forward for the testimony on the business statewide business property tax, if they would address whether they would prefer having the inflator that they currently have or if they would prefer us moving to a valuation mechanism for this as opposed to the inflator. Because I think that if they were to be taxed on their value, increases would be significantly more, and the inflator actually is a pretty good deal for them.
It's a depressing.
But if they'd be willing to address that, I'd be happy to consider changing the indexing mechanism that we currently have to the valuation increases that are occurring.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Final comment?
Yes, one final comment. Thank you, committee and Madam Chair, for considering this. I'll be here as long as I can. I do want to just make very clear that my bill, as amended, eliminates that inflator.
Yes.
And then the additional also buys down the business property.
We understand that.
Thank you very much.
Senator Coonan. Senator Coonan brings us Senate File 791. And we will, before he begins, we will Senate File 144, as amended, is laid over. Senate File 791, Senator Coonan. And members, for this, we also have the a summary, the bill language, and a revenue estimate. Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll do a quick run-through of the bill, and then I also have Mr. Monty Williams here to make a few comments also.
We'll take all the testimony at one time.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Senate File 791 defines a little cigar as wrapped in paper containing tobacco. It has a filter that's an integrated cellulose acetate and does not weigh more than 4.5 pounds. And also defines moist stuff, snuff, as powdered, finely cut or ground, and not intended for smoking. Includes moist snuff as a tobacco product, so it makes that change. Also maintains the distributor and use tax rate of 35% of the wholesale price for tobacco products, and it excludes moist snuff and little cigars. Okay. It imposes a separate per ounce tax rate for moist snuff and a proportional prorate for quantities over 1.2 ounces, and then for packages of under 1.2 ounces, it would be taxed as if it weighed 1.2 ounces. It imposes a distributor and use tax on little cigars, the same as a cigarette at 48 cents a pack, and imposes a health impact fee for little cigars, the same as cigarettes at 75 cents. Adds moist snuff to the monthly reporting requirements for both the in-state distributors and out-state distributors that do business with in-state retailers, and adds moist snuff to the monthly consumer use tax requirements, and then increases the fee rate from $1.75 to 2.5 cents per cigarette, and that's sold by manufacturers that aren't subject to the 1998 tobacco litigation settlement. And I think the part that's probably the most unique to this bill is that for moist snuff, it changes from wholesale pricing to pricing by weight. And that's a quick overview of the bill.
Senator Coonan, it was noted in a review that you didn't have any reference to the floor stocks. Was that like the other bills have had, the dealing with a tax on current inventory? Is that something that you was intentional in your bill, or is that something that you'd consider?
No, that's intentional in the bill, yeah.
Okay. Are there questions for...
Madam Chair.
Senator Coonan, Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, Senator Coonan, have you done some work on this definition of little cigar that is getting a little more definitive, or can you, it appears to be different than the Senator Dibble bill, which I don't have right in front of me.
Yeah, I don't have the Senator Dibble bill either, but the definition of little cigars is, again, I'm not real deep into this, but
Senator Coonan, I think maybe with that kind of technical question, it might be helpful to have, how that definition is changed, to have Mr. Williams come forward to help us with that, specifically for that issue. And then we'll go to the general testimony on all the bills.
All right. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Mr. Williams, did you hear... Senator Skoy's question, would you like him to repeat it? And also, if you would identify yourself, please.
My name is Monty Williams. I'm
Mr.
here
Williams.
On behalf of all three in support of this bill. And yes, I did hear the senator's question.
You'd be responsible.
The definition included in this bill is a much more objective definition than in the other bills. It doesn't have to do with how it's marketed and things like that. It simply refers to the features of the product itself, the acetate filter and the wrapping of the paper. It does have a weight in there, but it's really going to focus on those two features, the wrapper and the filter, because what we're looking at here is the items that are competing against cigarettes, that's what they are, basically. And so we focus on the features of that product that makes it like a cigarette. And so you don't get into the definitions that other states have tried and it's failed, that you have to provide some kind of subjective analysis to come up with whether it is or is not one of these little cigars. And so this definition, you look at it, if it has an acetate filter and the wrapper is paper with some tobacco in it, then it, and it's less than that weight, it falls under the definition.
Thank you. Senator Skoy, is that responsive? Okay. Yep, thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Senator Coonan, anything else, or can we move to testimony?
Madam Chair, thank you. Let's go to testimony.
Okay. We'll start with Ms. Moylanen, please. And Dr. Courtney Jordan-Bachler, come up together. And while they're doing that, we'd like to, or we will lay over Senate File 791. I will also draw members' attention to the revenue estimates and the summaries of two other bills that we heard previously, Senate File 135, Senator Curla Nelson's, and Senate File 134, Senator Kerry Dietzick. We heard those earlier, and they will be part of the consideration as we move forward with any possible changes in tobacco tax policy. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Absolutely, and we have a couple handouts, too.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Molly Moylanen, and I work for Clearway Minnesota. Our mission is to reduce the harm that tobacco causes the people of Minnesota. Today, I am proud to kick off the testimony in support of all the bills that would increase the tax on tobacco on behalf of Raise It for Health. When you get your handout, take a minute to review on the backside the list of over 30 health and nonprofit organizations that have come together in coalition to reduce smoking in Minnesota by increasing the price of tobacco. Our coalition is a mix of leading health and nonprofit organizations, including health plans, hospitals, voluntary organizations, businesses, labor unions, and local governments. We share a common mission to increase the price of tobacco because it is the best tool we have to help smokers quit and to prevent kids from ever starting. According to leading national public health experts, the proven formula for reducing smoking is really threefold: strong smoke-free laws, prevention and cessation services, and higher tobacco prices. Thanks to many of you, Minnesota has a strong statewide smoke-free law. In fact, we just celebrated the five-year anniversary of the Freedom to Breathe Act last October. Minnesota also provides smokers with cessation services. Uninsured Minnesotans have access to stop smoking services like counseling and medication through Quit Plan services, and it doesn't cost the state a penny. But when it comes to the third key ingredient, tobacco taxes, Minnesotans, we can do better. Now, don't be fooled. Tobacco is still a big problem in Minnesota. After decades of sharp declines, our progress to reduce smoking has slowed. 77,000 Minnesota kids will use tobacco this year. And the toll of death and disease due to tobacco is startling, especially for low-income Minnesotans and minorities. But there are ways to break the cycle of addiction. And here in Minnesota, we've been doing the work to determine what they are. Last year, Clearway Minnesota worked with an economist from Georgetown who developed a model to determine the effectiveness of different tobacco control programs and policies on smoking rates. The study found that the price of tobacco was the largest contributing factor in reducing smoking rates in Minnesota from 1993 to 2011. Prevention programs, smoke-free laws, cessation services, youth access policies, and counter-marketing campaigns were also important, but price is king when it comes to driving down smoking. Today, you will hear from researchers and doctors, business leaders and youth advocates, and community leaders. They will share data and tell their stories and demonstrate the devastation that goes hand in hand with addiction and shine a light on the real benefits of increasing tobacco taxes. Now, you'll also hear from opponents. They will do anything to distract you from a fact that they know: tobacco tax increases reduce use. Opponents will argue that increasing tobacco taxes will lead to smuggling, that it will hurt businesses, and that the revenue isn't stable. These are simply scare tactics. We can counter these points with solid scientific evidence and show differently. But at the end of the day, these opposition arguments don't hold a candle to the health benefits of increasing the tobacco tax. I know many people find tobacco taxes regressive, so let me address that for a moment. Keeping tobacco prices low to protect people is wrong. Cheap tobacco is not a gift to low-income communities or communities of color with higher smoking rates. Take a look again at the coalition members who are here today in support. Many of our organizations are dedicated to serving Minnesotans who are most vulnerable. And studies show that low-income individuals are the most likely to quit or cut back when prices go up. There will be other arguments against increasing the tax on tobacco, but they won't outweigh the fact that increasing the tax on cigarettes will prevent thousands of Minnesota kids from becoming addicted. It's a clear choice. Protect kids, not tobacco industry profits. We want to thank the Governor, Commissioner Ellinger, Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch, Senator Scoie, Senator Nelson, Senator Dibble, and many of you for introducing and supporting legislation to increase the tax on tobacco this year. The public is with you. A majority of Minnesotans support increasing the tax on cigarettes by $1.50. The Raise It for Health Coalition stands ready to do what we can to see that the tobacco tax increase is in the final budget this year to help smokers quit and to prevent kids from ever starting. I also would like the opportunity to speak against Senate File 791, maybe after we take the testimony on the bills that would increase the price.
No, we're taking the testimony on everything right now because we only have a half an hour. So if you have, but very, very briefly, please respect the rights of everyone else to speak on these bills as well. And I know there's a temptation when you're near the beginning to take more time because it seems like we have more time, but we really don't. So if you could be very brief.
I will do my best.
And we're intending, by the way, for this hearing to end at 10:30.
Madam Chair, with the background that I provided, we cannot support Senate File 791. It's easy to see why this proposal is attractive to legislators and why you might assume it's supported by public health. But the truth is that it is riddled with problems, and the fact is that the bill is backed by Philip Morris. That will show you who will really benefit if it passes. Now, it's true that for the moment, it's going to increase the price on deep discount products and would raise new revenue for the state, but it also changes the legal landscape and creates loopholes that will allow the tobacco industry to sell its dangerous products and a greater profit to itself and pay less tax in the long run. Taxing moist snuff based on its weight rather than a percentage of its overall price ignores how the tobacco industry can easily manipulate the weight of smokeless products. The future of smokeless is changing. Unlike the chew or dip that we're all used to, the next generation of smokeless tobacco products is lightweight, it's discreet, it's spitless, and it's packed with nicotine. Just like cell phones, smokeless tobacco is getting smaller and lighter. Tobacco manufacturers are innovating and experimenting with tinier and tinier products, things that look like toothpicks and Tic Tacs. Use of these products is on the rise, especially among youth. While a tin of chewing tobacco weighs 1.2 to 1.5 ounces, a tin of snus weighs a tenth of an ounce, and a pack of nicotine sticks weighs 2/10 of an ounce. Under a weight-based system, the lighter the product, the lower the tax. This only benefits tobacco companies. As their products become lighter, the tax will stay flat or go down, and profits will increase. Now, it does include a minimum tax, and that aspect is reasonable, but it leaves the door wide open for manipulation. For example, with these Tic Tacs or the sticks, do you know how many of those could fit into one package? 40, 50, 100? I don't know, but with each of those sticks, they contain as much nicotine as 3 cigarettes potentially. And a package could have the equivalent amount of nicotine as 10 packs of cigarettes, all for the same low tax as a tin of Grizzly. This weight-based tax system generates a much smaller tax per dose. This is bad tax policy and definitely bad health policy. With the weight-based system, we're basically handing over the keys to the tobacco industry. They are in the driver's seat, manipulating the weights, upping the nicotine, and controlling both the tax and the price paid by consumers. That's why Philip Morris has pushed similar weight-based policies across other states. I also have an article here from MinnPost that does a really good job explaining it, and so I'd like to share that.
And I would like you to finish up, if you will, please.
That's right. I can address the little cigar definition, too, and why we would prefer considering the alternative. It does something different. It legitimizes little cigars as something different than a cigarette, which they aren't. We stand by our approach of expanding the definition of a cigarette to include both those wrapped in brown paper and those wrapped in white paper. We use the same objective standard, the filter, the weight, the wrapper. But with our definition, it will be included in the non-centerling manufacturer's fee, it must be stamped, and it will be subject to the minimum tax. So thank you. Ask yourself, who do you want in the driver's seat?
Thank you very much, Ms. Moylanen. I will ask people who now are coming forward if their testimony is substantively different, if you have something to add. Otherwise, if you would be very brief. Is it Bachelor?
Beckler.
Bachelor?
Beckler.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record, and
Absolutely.
Keep your testimony brief.
Yep. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Courtney Jordan Beckler. I'm a cardiologist and the vice president of the Penny George Institute for Health and Healing at Allina Health. I'm a mother and a volunteer of the American Heart Association. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the American Heart Association and Allina Health in support of Senate Files 209 and 144. As a cardiologist, I can tell you firsthand the devastation that tobacco has on the body. I want to give you a snapshot of how tobacco use develops and why it's so important to prevent young people from ever beginning. Today in Minnesota, there are 53,000 high school students who smoke daily. We know that if kids never begin smoking as youth, the chances are low that they'll ever pick it up once they become an adult. However, nearly 90% of all adult smokers began smoking while in their teens or earlier, and two-thirds became regular daily smokers before they reached the age of 19. Overall, roughly one-third of all kids who become regular smokers before adulthood will eventually die from smoking. In Minnesota, that means over 17,000 of our 53,000 kids who are now daily smokers will die from smoking. 5,100 Minnesotans die each year from tobacco-related illnesses. In fact, tobacco kills more Minnesotans than alcohol, homicides, car accidents, AIDS, illegal drugs, and suicides combined. The statistics are grim for those who fall into a tobacco addiction trap, but the real stories are from my patients I see every day. Just last week, I saw one of my many patients that suffers from the devastations of tobacco. Her legs, neck, heart, and lungs have all been had devastating effects because of tobacco use. She hobbled in with her oxygen tank, short of breath as always, and told me how her usual tasks have become more limited every day because of her smoking addiction. I asked her what she felt about raising the price of tobacco, and she told me anything to stop youth from ever starting smoking. When she was young, they didn't know about the devastating effects of tobacco, but it's much changed now. Unfortunately, she can't play with her grandchildren like she'd once envisioned as she grew old, and her life has changed dramatically. Tobacco is costly in terms of lives, but it also is costly in terms of excess medical costs. In fact, the cost to our state is staggering, nearly $3 billion. That's correct, $3 billion each year. That's how much Minnesota spends on excess health care costs due to smoking. A report was distributed to you called The Health Care Costs in Smoking Minnesota. In that report, you'll see that nearly $3 billion in medical costs related to smoking, including nursing home care, physician or other professional health services, hospital care, prescription drugs, and other personal health care for adults. It also includes $4 million in neonatal expenditures due to maternal smoking during pregnancy. What is not included? These total expenditures do not include the costs of lost productivity or workers' compensation that are indirectly attributable to smoking. We know that tobacco use reduces productivity and increases absenteeism. In order to see that $3 billion number decline, we need to convince Minnesotans to stop using tobacco products. Raising the cost of tobacco is the single most effective way to ensure this happens. In fact, there are few public health issues that are supported more by research or consensus. Countless economic and public health experts all come to the same conclusion. Higher costs deter young people from using tobacco and increase the number of current smokers who quit. The most important thing that we can all do as adults and parents and you as lawmakers is to make sure that tobacco products are as difficult as possible for kids to get their hands on. I think about the 15 years of education that I've spent since high school trying to prevent illness from ever starting, and I dream of the opportunity that you all have in this room to decrease the number of lives that will ever be touched by tobacco. In my entire life as a physician, I will never be able to impact the number that you will by actually increasing this tax. I urge you to increase the price of tobacco in Minnesota and think about our 17,000 sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, and neighbors, the kids that we all know and love, who will lose their lives prematurely to tobacco use if we do nothing. These two bills will ensure that I will deliver less bad news to my patients, that I will be able to tell more family members that their loved one has a real chance of recovery. Every time I walk into my office and can deliver good news instead of bad news to my patients, that's a win for all of us. Increasing the price of tobacco will save many lives, and it will prevent me from having to deliver bad news time and time again. I urge you to support Senate Files 209 and 144, and I thank Senators Dibble and Senator Nelson for introducing this important legislation. I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. I'd like to now call up Jill Larson, Thomas Bryant, and Court Holton. And if you'd come up together, we'll take your testimony serially. We'll start with you, Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jill Larson. I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. I am here to speak generally in favor of the policy that is addressed in Senate File 144, Senator Nelson's bill, which is the provision that both removes the inflator on the statewide business property tax and reduces the amended tax
version.
Over time.
Correct. The version that she amended. Yes,
Madam Chair, the amendment that was passed. We do support the policy of reducing the business property tax. You know, the governor has the proposal to take the inflator out. We appreciate that. We understand the legislature has lots of competing interests when you put your budget together. We got some good news today with the forecast, so things are looking up. So we would just ask that as you continue your deliberations and put your tax and budget bills together, that you keep in mind providing some business property tax relief if possible. Yeah. Thank you,
Ms. Larson. Mr. Bryant?
Madam Chair?
I think we
Can
don't
just
have
quick
very
ask
much
a question?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, I just have one quick question. What is the Minnesota Business Partnership stance on increasing the cigarette tax?
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, we don't have a position on the cigarette tax per se or all the different versions of it here. We have not historically taken a position on the cigarette tax. I'm simply here to talk about the property tax provision in Senate File 144.
Mr. Bryant?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant. I'm the executive director and legal counsel for the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. That's a trade association of tobacco wholesalers here in the state. Senate Files 144, 209, and 552 would all increase the state's cigarette and tobacco tax rates substantially. The wholesalers I represent are quite concerned about those increases because they believe it'll result in substantial sales declines, both at the wholesale level and at the retail level, and affect their businesses and their employees' jobs. Also, from a state's point of view, there is a likelihood that this kind of significant increase in these tax rates will result in a revenue shortfall over what is projected by the Revenue Department. The information I'm about to give you is not scare tactics. It's based on empirical revenue data, both projections and collections, in 19 other states over the past 3 years, and their experience may be relevant to what you have to deliberate here today. 17 states raised cigarette taxes over the past 3 fiscal years, and they incurred revenue shortfalls over what was projected. I have those documents. I've handed them out to the committee before. I'll do that at the end of my testimony. In particular, Wisconsin raised cigarette taxes by $1 per pack effective January 1st of 2008. They fell $131 million short of projected revenue after that tax increase. Then Wisconsin raised it by another 75 cents a pack in September 1st of 2009. They were $60 million short over projected revenues. So over that two-year period, they were $191 million less.
Do you have that data that you could share with us?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. You can continue. The page will come and get it.
An article just published last week in the state of Illinois indicates that after this Illinois raised their cigarette tax by a dollar per pack in June of 2012, they raised only about $12 million in new revenue over the projected $300 million they thought they were going to raise. In the state of Washington, their revenue department issued a report last month that indicated that that state has lost $357 million in fiscal 12 alone because of illegal untaxed cigarettes, cross-border, and smuggling. The important part to take away from that is large increases in these taxes generally result in significant revenue shortfalls. Minnesotans will have the option of traveling to North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa to purchase cigarettes and tobacco taxes at lower rates. We call it cross-border. But there's also the conditions that would be set for a black market here in Minnesota, in particular with North Dakota. North Dakota's rate is 44 cents a pack. Compared to the governor's rate or the others, you're looking at a tax rate about one-fifth of what Minnesota's cigarette tax rate would be. That's about $18 a carton. So there's a real incentive for people to cross over and buy in North Dakota. But there's another factor to take into account here. North Dakota does not require a cigarette tax stamp to be affixed to its cigarette packages like Minnesota. Since unstamped cigarettes are very hard to track and trace for enforcement purposes, cigarettes can flow from North Dakota into Minnesota, and you won't know where they came from. But at that low tax rate, they'll be very attractive for black marketeers to bring into the state and to sell. This is truly a new era in cigarette and tobacco taxation, where cross-border sales and black market conditions result in significant revenue reductions over what has been proposed and projected. Now, while a lot of that discussion today has been on cigarettes, it's important to remember the excise tax on tobacco products as well. When the tobacco tax rate was 70% as it is currently, the premium cigar market in Minnesota was devastated. And I want to give you an example. This is a box of Romeo and Julieta premium cigars. Currently, it retails at $299 for this box, 27 cigars. You add on sales tax, and it's $319 for that box at a tobacco store. If you go to the 95% rate, the highest in the bills today, that box would retail for $339, and with sales tax, it goes up to $362 for that one box. Now, you can buy that same identical box on the internet. I printed this off this morning from FamousSmokes.com. That same box you can buy online for $125.99. No excise tax, no sales tax, no shipping charges. You can literally buy almost three boxes of these on the internet for one box you can buy in the state at our current tax rates. That means at a 95% rate, the state is going to lose $141.10 per box of these that are bought over the internet. They are delivered to your mailbox by the U.S. mailman. It's allowed under federal law. One final note, and I'll conclude my testimony. Regarding Senate File 209, you may remember I testified a couple weeks ago before this committee that we can't stamp with our wholesalers through our cigarette stamping machines little or small cigars. They won't fit through the machine. We'd have to hand stamp them one at a time. I brought that little hand stamp iron to demonstrate. Senate File 209 would also require that. About 100 different little and small cigar products, which would then be defined as cigarettes, would no longer be stamped in the state of Minnesota by my wholesalers, and they wouldn't be sold. So it's like de facto prohibition on these kind of products. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bryant. Mr. Holton, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Court Holton, and I represent the Cigar Association of America. Most witnesses come up and say they're going to be brief, and they're not. I think I can be done in 2 minutes, Madam Chairman.
Appreciate it.
Senate File 209 has a definition that redefines certain cigars as cigarettes. And if you look at that definition, with the 4.5 pound, the acetate, the full leaf wrapper instead of the two-thirds, you will find that you're literally describing in statute this product. This is made by the Middleton Company, which is owned by Philip Morris. This is another very popular product that competes with this product. This would be kicked out of Minnesota because Mr. Bryant's wholesalers will not stamp by hand. I don't think that that is a valid purpose for the tax code. Point number two, the FDA is saying that it's about to come out with regulations on cigars, which probably changed the whole game plan. Now, I've heard from federal agencies before, and I'm not going to guarantee you that that'll happen anytime soon, but that is their position. Number three, you've heard about this definition being in other states. Well, it's in other states because the companies involved are national, and they're having the same fight in the other states, and that's why you're hearing the same things. Number four, there's supposedly a loophole created when the feds banned flavored cigarettes. I want you to know that when the feds banned flavored cigarettes, there were no flavored cigarettes to ban. The only thing that would come close to that would be menthol, and they exempted menthol from the ban. What's the difference between cigars and cigarettes? Cigarettes use a tobacco that's flue-cured. It's acidic, it's smooth, and it's high in sugar content. Cigars are air-cooled, they're alkaline, they're lower sugar content, they're very harsh, and little cigars are hot and harsh. So cigarettes are much more non-tobacco-y, to make up a word. Cigars are much more tobacco-y. They are for, you know, people who want more of that kind of taste. This is, during the election, I heard a lot of talk about taxing the rich guy. The guys that we're talking about today with these products, that's Joe Sixpack. Taxing, if you're going to raise a tax, you know, I don't feel I can have much impact on that. But I would agree with Senator Scoey, for us out there that read statutes and that, please drop this delusion of a health impact fee. I think it's an insult to the intelligence of your constituents. Call it a tax is what it was and it's always been. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. I'd like to invite Brian, is it Foyte, and then Mr. Mike Brommelkamp. And then if Mr. Williams wants to add any comments to ones he's already given, he can come back up, and we'll see. We have 6 minutes left. If you could limit your testimony to a minute, that would be great.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Foydick. I am here. I work on behalf of RAI Services Corporation. That's Reynolds American Tobacco. You should know prior to that, I worked 13 years with UST, which is now Altria. I'm here to testify in opposition to Senate File 791, specifically in regard to the tax of other tobacco products, otherwise known as the weight-based tax. If you look at the revenues from your cigarette tax in Minnesota, you'll see sort of a sporadic revenue stream. It goes up, it goes down, it's generally flat and declining. If you look at your revenue stream from other tobacco products in Minnesota, you will see steady increases year after year after year. This bill, the language in it related to the smokeless tax, is model legislation from ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Its primary advocate is the largest tobacco company in the U.S. and colleagues and friends of mine at Altria. All it does is close the price gap and use the government to close the price gap between the Altria products and Reynolds and Swedish and other products. They can close the price gap through normal business approaches if they choose to. They choose not to do it, and this approach is asking the Minnesota legislature to do that work for them. I don't think it makes the OTP tax better, and right now you have two drivers for revenue. Whether you sell more tobacco volume, your tax revenues increase. If prices increase, you get more revenue. If you change the tax to the ALEC model legislation, you have one revenue driver, and that will only be volume. Price will no longer affect it, and you're making the tax more like the cigarette tax, less increases, and I'll wrap up. Happy to take any questions, and thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Brummelkamp?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'm in support of the various proposals to raise the tax on tobacco products. My name is Mike Brummelkamp. I'm a principal and certified public accountant with Olson Thielen here in the Twin Cities. I'm also president of the Minnesota Business Valuation Group and have been involved with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce for many years, particularly in the area of healthcare policy development, as well as other boards and chambers and business development organizations. I'm here to talk about the impacts on tobacco taxes on the business community. Tobacco use places a huge financial burden on the state and its businesses. Here are four simple facts. $2.87 billion a year in Minnesota are spent on health care costs directly related to smoking. Health care costs are 34% higher for smokers. On average, an employee who smokes costs his or her employer nearly $3,400 every year in health care, missed work, and lower productivity. All told, smoking creates $1.2 billion in costs to our employers every year. In my opinion, these costs are just clearly unacceptable, and if the state has the ability to reduce these tobacco-related costs, we absolutely should do it. An increase on the scales proposed could provide savings of $1.65 billion over time in Minnesota. The proposals are good for business, they're good for the health of our citizens, and it's good for the state. I'm urging you to support these proposals, and thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Williams?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, even though it may be short. I'm going to focus my testimony down to a couple of areas. The first is the the cigarette tax increases and the evasion issue. I'm just going to go there. I spent 30 years at the Board of Equalization in California. I was chief of excise taxes and chief of criminal investigations there. And I can tell you for a fact with the type of tax increases you're talking about cigarettes here, it's not a scare tactic. It's a fact. You will have not only cross-border issues, but you will have a black market. Whatever you have now will be largely increased due to the taxes you're considering today. And I do encourage you to consider that in your deliberations as to what you're going to do with the cigarette taxes, because it will have an impact on how much revenue you receive, and in addition to that, what you do to your consumers in this state when they will start buying from these illegal sources. I'd also like to focus on, as I said earlier, the little cigar issue. Our definition in the bill in 791 is more subjective, and I think it only includes these types of products. It's not after these types of products. They don't have a celluloid acetate filter or similar. They have a plastic or a wooden filter. So that's just simply not the case. You're really looking at these types of things with that definition. Now on to the OTP tax and the weight-based version. When this tax was put into place in 1955 in Minnesota, the marketplace was pretty standard. Moist smokeless was only premium, and it all sold for one price. So when taxes were looked at how to pick up an excise or a unit tax, which is why cigarettes are a unit, gas is a unit, and alcohol is a unit. You couldn't really do it because of plug, chew, roll your own, all the other products. So they went to a percentage tax because all of this, the largest thing in that segment of the marketplace, OTP, was moist smokeless, and it all sold for the same price. You got basically a unit excise tax. The sales tax picks up the difference on prices. However, the marketplace has dramatically changed. There was the introduction of discount products in early 2000, and now, for example, their market share in 2000 was zero. In 2005, it was 17%, and today in 2012, or last year in 2012, it was 50% of the marketplace. Your average tax collected per can of this product in Minnesota has gone down over 50 cents a can because of consumers downtrading to cheaper products. A weight-based system puts everybody back on the same level playing field. Everybody pays the same tax. These are two packs of cigarettes, a premium, a discount. They pay the same amount of tax. Two cans of smokeless, premium, discount.
Mr.
This pays $1.88, 85 cents.
We're running out of time.
In summary, I'm just saying that a weight-based tax will fix a system. Your marketplace has changed. Your tax system didn't, and you need to. We recommend that you address these issues. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Okay. We have four testifiers left, and I think we'll go a minute each. We are running late here. If you can all come to the table, if you can find another chair there. Jenny Johnson, Jonathan Rose, Lena Houston, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing these right, and Kayla Narum. And introduce yourself as you begin your testimony. Introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jenny Johnson, and I am a Tobacco Control Leadership Fellow for the Asian American community. Last fall, 44 of us joined with other community members to see what could be done about the health disparities resulting from commercial tobacco use in our communities. As Minnesota is preparing to set its next two-year budget, we saw an opportunity to join with others to do something to lessen this burden within our communities. 44 of us signed a letter to Governor Dayton in support of a commercial tobacco tax, and we have copies of the letter here for members. We aren't here alone. We, in fact, represent a group of individuals from targeted communities. Now, I say targeted communities because the African American and African community, the Asian American, the Asian Pacific Islander community, the American Indian, Chicano Latino, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities are all targeted by the tobacco industries, an industry that spends over $150 million a year in Minnesota marketing their products to attract and retain customers. Now, as a girl growing up in Chisholm, I was sheltered from many of these harms, but within my Asian American community, many tobacco companies sponsor festivals and offer promotional items. They target Asian women who are looking to fit into mainstream American culture by luring them with claims of independence. Good health is a right, and we as a society can take steps to promote and advance health within our society for everyone. Lower tobacco prices only benefit the tobacco industry. And for the health of my community, I urge you to increase the tax on commercial tobacco. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Dr. Jonathan Rose. I'm a chemical engineer with 3M Company. I'm also a community organizer and a research consultant for the State Council on Black Minnesotans. As you've heard this morning, there are huge disparities in tobacco use and in tobacco-related morbidity and mortality within African-American communities and other communities of color. 28% of African-American adults in Minnesota are smokers, compared to a 15% average. The cancer rate for African-American men in Minnesota is 13% higher than average, and the mortality rate related to tobacco-related disease for American men and women is 42% higher. As a father of four children and five grandchildren, I am very much concerned with the exceptional ability of tobacco companies to advertise to young people, to target them and addict them to smoking and tobacco products. According to the CDC, the tobacco companies nationally spend $10 billion in advertising, about $150 million in Minnesota. Of that revenue for advertising, 50% is targeted at young people. Our tobacco companies expend these resources because they know they cannot grow long-term unless they can captivate young people and addict them to smoking for 30 to 50 years. I was a lead researcher for the last 2 years in African immigrant communities looking at smoking among people 18 to 30 years, and there's a 45% smoking rate among young adults. We're very concerned about that. Many studies have shown, as you've heard, that high cigarette prices will have the greatest impact on young, economically challenged people. Therefore, I would like to thank you for your time and urge you to address the price of cigarettes and other commercial tobacco products to help prevent my future generations and yours from becoming addicted to these cleverly advertised killers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. And to the last two testifiers, if you can try and hold it to a minute each, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. My name is Lena Houston. I agree with my colleagues here that increasing the tobacco tax will prevent our children from becoming addicted to tobacco and will improve the health of our communities. What I want to address is the wealth of our communities. As you know, our targeted communities are from lower incomes, and with the recent economic recession, many of us are struggling economically. You will hear from opponents of tobacco taxes that the tax is regressive and hurts minority community members and lower-income individuals. It is true that minority communities have lower income, and lower-income people smoke at higher rates. As a member of the LGBT community, a community that smokes at rates 68% higher than the general public, I see firsthand how our communities suffer disproportionately from the consequences of commercial tobacco use including loss of money, loss of health, and loss of life. One simple way to help correct this problem is to increase Minnesota's commercial tobacco tax. Higher tobacco prices benefit rather than harm our communities. Thank you for your consideration this morning.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kayla Narum. I am from Andover, Minnesota. I am a senior at the University of Minnesota, majoring in marketing and entrepreneurial management. I volunteer with Colleges Against Cancer, the Relay for Life of Maple Grove and Osseo, and the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I don't smoke, and I'm here to tell you why and encourage you to act so other kids make the same choice. The past 7 years of my life have revolved around the effects of cancer because I lost my father to esophageal cancer a week after my 14th birthday. Yes, he was a smoker, but he was more than that, too. He was my dad, and was not the guy that ever wanted to ask for help. He could fix anything on his own. When he started having difficulties swallowing and pain in his throat and stomach, he knew something wasn't right. He went to see a doctor and was admitted to the hospital and diagnosed with esophageal cancer. I thought my dad could never be that sick. He was still invincible in my young eyes. The next few months, my dad was getting more sick and more weak from the chemo. He was still at every sporting event and showed up to everything. He was never too sick to be the greatest dad that he could. One day, he was feeling sick, went to the hospital, and the next thing I remember, he's in the ICU, in a coma, and I'm being told that there's nothing left that they can do. He was in hospice care for about 2 months before he finally passed away on December 25th, 2006, a week before his 40th birthday. I only got to know my dad for a short 14 years, but in that time, he shaped the person I have become today. He wasn't there when I graduated from high school. He wasn't there to intimidate my first boyfriend. And I won't get a father-daughter dance at my wedding. I've learned to be okay with that because my dad was there for 14 years, and that in itself was a blessing. Today, I'm testifying to remember my dad, to let his memory live on, and hopefully in some small way be a part of making sure that no child, parent, sibling, or friend ever has to go through what me, my family, and my dad went through. You are not the first lawmakers to have to address the issue of tobacco, and you likely won't be the last. I want to make sure you understand the historic importance of this legislation, its life-saving potential, and the devastating consequences of doing nothing. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network is well known for standing up to the tobacco industry, its positions driven by evidence and science. Long before I was born, two doctors, researchers for the American Cancer Society, and lifelong smokers decided to look into what was then described as a possible but doubtful connection between smoking and cancer. The two doctors found that indeed smoking was the cause of cancer death. After that, they quit smoking. Despite all the evidence, the tobacco industry comes back with lies and more lies, targeting replacement smokers, also known as my friends and myself. Youth, students, kids, like me, are price sensitive. When the price of something increases dramatically, we just simply can't afford to buy it. Many lawmakers have had to sit where you are now, faced with taking on the tobacco industry, their lies, their money. You have a choice to make. Do you, faced with the facts, choose to protect Minnesota kids or the tobacco industry? The fight is far from over. We need to do whatever we can to protect kids, families, communities from the harms of tobacco. Please raise the price of all tobacco products. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Narum, and thank you to all the testifiers. Next week on Tuesday, a full tax committee meets, and we're adjourned.